Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina, producer of the program normally, filling in for Alan Chartok this week. He is away, honored to do so. And of course, one of the regular sparring partners on this program is the guy who keeps his eye on all of the, well, the naughty and nice things that are going on down at the Capitol. And that's Blair Horner, Legislative Director for the New York Public Interest Research Group. We call that NYPIRG here in New York. Welcome, Blair.
Thanks for having me, and happy holidays.
Hey, happy holidays to you, and of course to all our listeners. We're talking on Christmas week, of course, traditionally a slow week in the Capitol. You know,
that's right.
But it really hasn't been that slow. If we start with last week's major decisions, and why don't we start there? We'll take a little look back at the year and some of the major things that happened, and maybe ask you to tell us what you think's coming for the new session, which, of course, will begin with the governor's State of the State address on January 7th this year, Wednesday, as he always does, at, I'm imagining, 1 p.m., with slideshows and all sorts of other fun things that we'll be greeted to.
With some comic relief.
Oh,
sometimes
I'm sure.
There's the occasional joke in there, which no one would expect in the old days in the State of the State.
And normally you would know that with applause, but in any case, we'll move on to last week. We were waiting for a long time for a decision on hydrofracking in New York, natural gas. We've seen the country move toward it. Many states have embraced it, and we've even seen the price of gasoline come down as a result of it. However, we weren't maybe so sure about the decision when it came down. It was a shock, I would think, for many who thought maybe the governor would approve it on some level. But we now have a ban on fracking coming for 2015 and for the foreseeable future on hydrofracking in the state. So you're going to talk about that first. Then we'll talk about the same day decision about casinos in New York.
Well, I mean, certainly the conventional political wisdom, such that it is, and even though that's sort of an oxymoron, was that, you know, the governor waiting to after the election to make his announcement, certainly people that were looking for a ban were nervous. The theory was, well, maybe the governor would advance some sort of expansion or allow it to happen under certain circumstances going into the new year. And I think it sort of caught a lot of people by surprise when he went all in, really, for a ban. And the presentation done by the health commissioner really reviewed the mounting scientific evidence. And what is different now than maybe it was even 2 years ago when the governor was expressing support for fracking is there's almost daily new studies coming out now, mounting evidence about some of the public health and environmental issues about fracking. And New York is the state that was made famous 35 years ago by something called Love Canal. Mm-hmm. And we know from the dredging of the PCBs in the Hudson that oftentimes policymakers can make environmental decisions that when you look at them in the rearview mirror, they think to themselves, what was I thinking? And so I think that when you have that sort of history, I think it made this administration more cautious on as a policy matter. And I think the politics started to work in favor of a ban. Pew Charitable Trust put out a national poll, came out probably the middle of November, which found that the increasing numbers of Democrat and independent voters were moving from supporting fracking to opposing it. And that national movement, I think, is certainly reflected in New York, where the strongest opposition to fracking, according to a Siena poll that came out last week, was in the Southern Tier. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you look at the politics of it moving in a certain direction, the sort of history of caution coupled with mounting scientific evidence, I think, led to the governor making what turns out to be a national decision, because New York is really the first state with any appreciable shale gas reserves that decided to say no to the oil and gas industry. And so that, I think, certainly breathed new life into the movement across the country. And I think sets the governor apart from many of his colleagues across the country who've allowed it.
And as you and Alan and so many others have talked about in the beginning, it seemed like the governor was taken by surprise on this. A lot of us thought he was going to move and approve fracking for state until the grassroots movement rose up and challenged him directly, most notably people like Mark Ruffalo, the actor, and Natalie Merchant, the singer-songwriter, as well as Pete Seeger, the great folk singer who's passed. But in a video, told him, you will go down as the worst governor, unlike your father, who was perhaps the greatest governor in New York, if you approve this. So how much of this is altruism, this is the right thing to do, or politics. Let's say, you know, I get that progressive base back from me.
You know, obviously it's both, right? I mean, no one gets to be a powerful elected official in the United States of America unless you're contemplating what the politics are of your policy decisions. And in this case, I mean, you can look at the same evidence both ways, right? I mean, there's a lot mounting evidence about cause for concern, but there's no slam dunk that you should never do it. I mean, any sort of industrial scale mineral extraction is going to have environmental and public health concerns. And the policymaker's job is to balance the costs versus the benefits. The politics can make a big difference. And I, as I mentioned before, the Pew poll shows a change in the country, particularly among Democrats and independents, not so much Republicans. And if you want to be considered a national figure, you want to be on the right side. If you're a Democrat, you want to be on the right side of those two groups. And so my guess is healthy doses of both had an influence on the governor. But one other thing, I mean, you referenced about this grassroots thing. I mean, I'm often talking to Alan or you or anybody at WM or anybody anywhere about the terrible Citizens United decision, which basically opens corporate war chests to influence public policy all across the country and how pernicious that can be. And that's true.
The argument is the people with the money win.
That's right. The golden rule. Those with the gold rule. But here's a case in the state of New York where the oil and gas industry, probably the most profitable industry certainly in the history of the planet, maybe in the universe, got beat. And it was really it was basically a grassroots movement. There were celebrities involved, like you mentioned, actors, Yoko Ono was involved.
Sure.
I mean, there's all the celebrities. But it became a real fight between organized grassroots people and big money. And in this case, the people won. And so it's a much more inspiring tale when people get depressed about the politics of the country. There's a lot to be depressed about. But when you get depressed about it, there are instances where a well-organized public can trump even the most powerful of industries.
Well, speaking of depressed,
I hope that wasn't depressing.
No.
I hope that was happy.
Actually, not at all.
I mean, it is the holiday week.
Yes.
And we're supposed to be bringing good cheer to our listeners.
That's true. Well, let's take a bet on that and go to casinos.
That's right.
And that's why I said depressed, because we really don't know. We'll back up a little. There's the ballot proposal.
This was the Cuomo administration sort of sticks in and puts its thumb on the scale to write the language for whether or not the state wanted casinos in a way that came to a yes vote.
Right. Exactly.
So, they gamed the question.
Yeah. And in fact, when you went in, you could have been confused and picked the wrong answer because of the way it was worded.
That's right. It was a roll of the dice. Let's keep using these metaphors.
It wasn't a deuce.
It wasn't snake eyes.
It wasn't snake eyes. Well, so, okay. So now on the same day that the governor is having this cabinet meeting in which the two top officials on fracking, the health commissioner and the ENCON commissioner, are making that announcement, we're awaiting for a few hours later the decision on casinos.
That's right.
And now we've got three. There was a potential for four. The committee voted for three. We've got one slated for Schenectady County, one for Sullivan and Thompson, which I think was one that was expected, and Seneca County in New York. So now more casinos. We're just hearing, as we're speaking today, that the Oneidas are going to have proposed a $20 million casino for Frank Baum's home in Chittenango, New York. And of course, the Wizard of Oz, Wizard of Oz themed casino. We've got a lot of casinos already around the region,
in
the state, and more to come. So back to the word depressed, does this end up being a boom? Or in the end, an economic viability or depression in those areas where these casinos are?
Well, WAG described it as New York is getting into the business 15 years too late. Casinos is not one of the areas of expertise that I have. NYPERG has no position on whether or not the state should have casinos. So, you know, this is a little more outside of my policy wheelhouse. But there's certainly a lot of evidence that at some point you hit a saturation rate and you're going to end up really relying on locals coming to spend their money there. And when they do that, they're not spending it somewhere else. I think the governor's argument was to support the casino amendment was that people were taking their money and going out of state and spending it in Connecticut or New Jersey or Pennsylvania, and that this way, by New York doing it, we would be basically keeping the money in the state. Well, that's not an economic development strategy. That's just keeping the money in the state. And we know who tends to gamble, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they're supposed to be adults, but, you know, by and large, these are people that probably can't afford to lose the money. And so whether or not this is an economic stimulus or not, I think it's going to, you know, only time will be able to tell. There probably will be some sort of economic jolt in the beginning because there'll be construction. people will go to the new to show up because of the newness of the thing. I mean, for example, the one in Schenectady, the closest casino is probably the one at Turning Stone.
Turning Stone, correct.
And so there'll be a draw for actually in Saratoga too.
That's true.
And there'll be some sort of draw for people to be coming into Schenectady. May help Schenectady combined with what's going on at Proctor's.
They certainly
and
developed with Proctor's in mind, so that there's
that's
not
right.
an entertainment venue slated for the casino itself. They will be directing you toward Proctor's.
That's
and
right.
Places
that's
like
right.
that in downtown.
And so, you know, how that plays out, I mean, the timing of it, just to go back to your sort of initial observation, it came out the day of the fracking decision. I think it's reasonable to conclude that they happened on the same day because one argument, one issue where the governor said no, which was the fracking, had been advanced as an economic development strategy for upstate New York. The casinos, the three casinos, are all in upstate New York. And I think that having them both occur on the same day gave the governor the ability to argue that he was doing some things for upstate New York, even if it wasn't going to be fracking. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen on these things? I mean, the one in Seneca, I'm not quite sure what the population base is. I mean, there's a sort of a casino out of Batavia Downs.
Yep.
I don't know if it's going to be drawing from that. There's obviously activities in Syracuse and Rochester. The one in Schenectady, I think, you know, has some possibility to draw from, particularly the Adirondacks and stuff in the summer. And then the one down at Sullivan is really, I think, where the action will be in terms of being able to draw
from New York.
City.
Yeah.
Although you got Aqueduct in New York City.
True.
And that one, by the way, is fabulously successful. Hmm. So it may mean you could do two. But the casinos are not a sure bet if it comes to economic development.
And then what do you do with the money? Where does it go into the general fund? Are you going to put any money into, you know, gambling problems and other issues? You know, what happens there?
Both,
yeah.
I think. You know, I mean, everything's fungible in New York. New York is a state that collects over $2 billion in tobacco revenues and yet's gotten away with slashing its anti-smoking programs by more than 50% over the last few years. So there's no guarantee that the moral imperative to actually use some of the money to help the people that get addicted to gambling, that the money will be there down the road.
There was somewhat of a brush fire going on for a bit about whether these legislators are going to get a pay raise,
yeah.
Blair. And, you know, we sort of were hearing these rumblings and that perhaps it would be accompanied by a major ethics reform agreement with the governor. Some water's been dousing those flames as of late. What the heck's going to happen with this?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if they were going to do it, you would have thought they would have done it already. The speaker made some noises about possibly that they could come back even next week between Christmas and New Year's, and happens to be the time when the public would be the least interested in what's happening in Albany.
Hmm.
Yeah, right. Well, it does make you suspicious. Lawmakers have not had a pay raise since 1999. $79,500 plus per diems, which is roughly $172 every day they're in Albany, plus if they're a leader on a committee.
Lulu?
Or that's right. Or in the legislature, they get more money, anywhere from $6,000 to $40,000. So
and that's most of them, isn't it?
That's most of them. All the senators get additional stipend. All the assembly Republicans get additional stipend, and about half the assembly Democrats do. So really, the conference that wants the pay raise the most is that half, that other half of the assembly Democratic conference,
right?
Because there's so many of them, there's not enough positions.
Sure.
Now, that being said, $79,500 is the third highest in the country right now. And we have the highest per diem rates of any state in the country. So really, are they suffering in comparison to other states?
And they're part-time,
and they
Blair.
Are,
you know anybody getting paid $80,000 for part-time work?
Only those who work at AMC. I mean, that's
right.
Really the only place that I can think of. So I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, California's number one at $90,000 and change. Pennsylvania's number two at 84 and change. New York is third at 79 and change. You know, so what's the proper number? That's one issue. Another issue, if I'm in the legislature, I mean, they talk about the New York City Council getting paid about $112,000, but they always never mention, they fail to bring up that those guys are term limited. I don't think they're talking about adding term limits in Albany. So what's the proper number? Is there a reform? If I was in the legislature, I think I would try to push a reform that would, you know, set up some sort of commission to look at the salary issue sort of on an ongoing basis to deal with increases in inflation or whatever.
So COLA kind of a situation.
Or some way to de-link pay raises from being extorted on the policy side.
What about de-linking their private attorney partnerships and their
businesses? There's a legitimate issue. Should they be considered full-time? And Now, you know, their argument would be there's no other state in the country that's full-time, so why should New York? There's only the Congress. And the Congress, you're allowed to have outside income. It's just that it's capped at a certain amount. So that could be a model for reform. But then someone has to enforce it. And so then you're back to what's the enforcement of the state's ethics laws. And
right back to the main problem.
Right back to the problem. Why we have all this, you know, basically like this sort of corruption crime wave in Albany, it's seemingly unending, is because the state enforcers are not there to do the job, and we have to rely on the U.S. Attorney's Office. So, you know, you get back, when you work backwards from this particular problem on the pay raise, if you want to do anything about it, the governor's arguing he wants various reforms linked to a pay raise, and that's what happened last time. If you wanted to deal with the pay raise along the lines that you're describing, which is to make them full-time, you'd need to have some oversight agency to sort of deal with that, and you get back to the failures of the current system to do it right. So, I think the pay raise is an interesting issue. I don't know, when people say they deserve it because they haven't had one in a while, I guess that's true, but I don't know what that number should be. I mean, what's the empirical way? Should they be the highest paid state legislature in the country?
Well, and not only that, but the people have kind of spoken in on this.
Oh, yeah, they don't want.
And even if you want ethics reform, we don't want you to have a pay raise.
Right.
You've got a whole coalition that wants the minimum wage raised for people who can barely put 2 cents together to survive, and they're talking about a pay raise.
That's right. I mean, it definitely plays into the pitchforks and, you know, burning torches sort of vision sure. of people outside the Capitol if they did something. That may be the reason why nothing has happened, and it may be the reason why nothing does happen.
Okay, what's going to happen with education? The governor has literally drawn a line in the sand and said he wants to break up the last public monopoly. We see, I spoke with Ken Lovett from the Daily News, who has an item suggesting that Speaker Silver is ready to stand up in this fight. You've got the Public Employees Federation, the union, who didn't endorse the governor, and they've gotten some payback when it comes to taking about 1,000 of their union workers and making them, quote, management confidential, a tactic that's been used before with administrations, not just the Cuomo administration. But, you know, we've got a major fight when it comes to education and unions in New York.
Yeah, I mean, the education, I mean, when you look ahead to 2015, the fight in education, because you have the Common Core issue, linked to that, teacher evaluations, the expansion of charter schools, you have that sort of pressure, the teachers who are basically at war with the governor. And, you know, it is definitely a combustible fight. And the speaker, you know, historically, when a governor gets elected, the first term, the leader of his party in the legislature, and it's always been a he, generally gives the governor a pass. It's the second term where things start to get a little rougher. And
the governor's popularity is down.
In this particular case, yes. Although I think people forget that Massachusetts, Illinois, and Maryland, all blue states, elected Republican governors.
True.
This particular governor won with a fairly hefty margin, even if it is his popularity is down. So
although a million less votes.
Yes, no doubt about it. And yet he will have support among the Senate Republicans, who now control the Senate. They also are mad at the teachers' unions. They also support charter expansion. I think that there will be, I think education could be a big fight and could be the big stumbling block in getting a budget done this year.
And if we're talking about reform like we just were, we should also note that some of the biggest contributors to the governor's campaign were those that support charter schools.
That's right. Well, they're huge, right? So you have the biggest donors in New York. I mean, who was it? Willie Sutton said, why do you rob banks? It's because that's where the money is. When it comes to campaign contributors in New York, the money is in hedge fund managers on Wall Street and real estate developers in Manhattan. And that's where this governor got a ton of money. And they didn't just give the money because they're feeling charitable. They want something in return. On the real estate side, big issue is going to be rent control. On the hedge fund side, there's probably a million issues, but one of them will be because a lot of those guys are tied in with the charter movement, is going to be the issue of education and what should be done.
Well, as we go forward into 2015, I'm wondering whether or not the ramifications of the Moreland Commission might rear its head. We don't know yet, although we know that documents have certainly been gathered and something's going on with Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney in New York, but we don't know what might happen out of this. We mentioned ethics reform. Of course, just as a review, the governor set up this Moreland Commission to fight public corruption, quickly said, I will go out and investigate everyone, including me. Then they came to him, and he said, Well, not I created so it, so I can shut it down.
Not so much. I'm not so interested.
So he shut it down, and then he was aptly criticized by the New York Times and all sorts of other places. Again, Ken Levin involved in the initial investigations of the real estate industry, which is where they were finding connections. And we don't know where this might go.
I mean, that's the wild card. When it comes to ethics reform, unless it's connected to something else, let's say a pay raise or some other issue that we don't even know about yet, the governor and the legislative leaders are, I think, happily bunkered into their positions. And at the moment, they're all pointing fingers. The governor's pushing public financing. He knows the Senate Republicans won't do it. So he's got his talking point. He can say he's advancing reforms, but nothing's really happening. There are, there's always opportunities to do things, but when you're looking at the ethics in Albany, unless something happens out of the U.S. Attorney's office, the prospects are dim. And now, what could the U.S. Attorney do? He could be doing anything, or he could be doing nothing. We don't even know. As you mentioned, all he's done so far is collected the Moreland Commission's files, and presumably there are at least allegations in those investigations. Whether or not it leads to anything out of the U.S. Attorney's office is anyone's guess. If there is a scalding report accompanied with convictions or indictments, that could blow the lid off it, and that there could be real meaningful reform, or at least being meaningful debate for reform in Albany as compared to the sort of kabuki debate that we too often see here. So, I mean, that one, I'm not so optimistic that anything will happen in that area absent some external force, either some other policy initiative or someone, you know, pulling the trigger on indictments and a scalding report. So, I mean, education, I think, will be a big issue. I think infrastructure is going to be a big issue. The New York City MTA capital plan is
plus, we had that windfall that came from the banks, right? Schneiderman, $5 billion.
That's right. And so there's this big bridge that has to be paid for. There's a debate over toll increases for the thruway. There's a $15 billion request, a shortfall for the MTA.
Debate over toll increases. You mean how much?
Well, you know, it hasn't happened, so you never know. There will be a debate. You put all that stuff together, and even the governor's proposals to modernize JFK and LaGuardia, there is definitely a lot that's going to happen on the infrastructure side. And even though you and I and probably everyone listening thinks $5 billion is a lot, it's not even a drop in the bucket when you look at the infrastructure needs of the state. So how that's all going to play out could be a very big deal in the upcoming session, in addition to the issue of education, as I mentioned before, rent control.
And arguably, probably the best use of the money would be for infrastructure as a one-time, even the controller and others have waited.
Yeah. I mean, the best practices would be you wouldn't use a windfall for ongoing expenses, right? So if you can use it somehow to leverage more money for these infrastructure needs or to earmark it for a particular project, that at least you could make it, that would be consistent with best practices in terms of what you do with a windfall.
He's Blair Horner, legislative director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, our guest this week on the Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Alan Chartok. He'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us, and Happy New Year, Blair. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.